Good morning and welcome to Focus 580. I'm David Inge. Glad to have you with us. I'm just chatting here with the guest for the first hour of Focus, Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on Tuesday, she's here and we talk about lawn and garden care. And any and all questions, well, she'll do her best to help you out. Maybe you have some kind of problem and you need some advice on dealing with it. You can call in and talk about that. Maybe you're still thinking about looking for a particular plant to go in a particular place. We can talk about things that grow in the home landscape, decorative stuff, trees, shrubs, flowers, grass, vegetables, houseplants, any and all of that. If you have a question, you give us a call, and I know Sandy will do her best to help you out. 333-9455 is the number here in Champaign-Urbana, and we do also have a toll-free line. That one is good anywhere that you can hear us, and that is 800-222-9455. So any point here, give us a call. We'll get in as many calls as we can. Thanks very much for being here.
Sure.
Once again.
As we were saying, it's nice to have an indoor job today.
Yes. We're now at the point where, yeah, it's starting to get kind of sticky. We're in July, which is the month in which we have, on average, the warmest temperatures. Mm-hmm. And I think actually it sort of lags. June is not so bad, but July and August. So we know it's going to be hot. We know there's going to be high humidity. And I suppose that's good in a sense. If we get good moisture and warm overnight temperatures, that's good for plants because it encourages them to grow, I suppose, unless it's real, real hot.
Yeah, it certainly depends on the plant, too. And as we know, there's some plants that tolerate this much better. I have some bananas at home, and they love this weather.
I'll bet.
And they think it's great. They're ornamental bananas, I should say. I don't actually get bananas off of them. But they love this weather, you know, hot. But then you get other plants that, you know, whether they're pansies or some of that early season stuff that you might have planted, it's really lagging. You know, lettuce and peas and all that stuff that likes the cooler weather, it's really going to take a dive when it gets this hot.
And I saw my first Japanese beetles, I think it was week before last. And I was really kind of surprised. I just saw a couple of them on a particular plant. And then I was looking around and I saw other cases that I thought probably or might have been beetle damage, but I hadn't actually seen any other beetles.
You want to come to my house?
Are they big time over there? No, that's okay. Sooner or later, I'm sure that I'll be
seeing
them.
A little bit later. You know, we were all betting. We were hoping that because of all the rain that we had earlier and the flooding, that maybe a lot of them drowned. So, you know, I'm pretty much live and let live, but when it comes to Japanese beetles, they're out of here. So I was really hoping a lot of them had drowned. But unfortunately, it seemed to be a little bit later. They came about a week or so later than what we normally see. But now they're really coming in full numbers, from what I can tell and from listening to other people. So there may be a few spotty areas where maybe people don't have quite as many as they had before, but unfortunately they must have life preservers or something because the little guys didn't drown in the soil. So.
All right. Well, you got questions about that or anything else, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. We'll start off with someone in Champaign, line one. Hello.
Hello. Mm-hmm. I have some tiger lilies that have come up every year, and now they look fine, but they just haven't opened, and they look like they're on the verge of opening, but they don't. They're closed.
So do the buds actually look brown, or they still look?
No, they're green.
Well, actually, mine have not flowered yet. I'm not sure where you're located, but mine have not flowered yet. It was kind of a funny year this year. Some things came really early, like the roses really popped on early. They liked that cool, wet weather we had earlier, and they took off, and they bloomed probably a week or two earlier. But some things I've noticed have actually bloomed later than normal. And so my tiger lilies are still in green bud, and probably it's going to be at least another week and a half, maybe 2 weeks before mine open.
Oh.
So I think it's been an odd year.
They look like they're on the verge, you know, for weeks.
Yeah, mine are just kind of hanging in there, too. But I looked at them, and they still seem nice and green.
Yeah.
So for one reason or another, they've kind of just hung in there. I'd give them a little bit of time. But as long as the buds aren't brown, then they should be fine, and they should go ahead and flower for you.
Okay, thank you.
Uh-huh,
all right,
sure.
Very good. Well, we were talking, I think the last couple of times we've talked, someone called and I was asking about peonies and said that her peonies hadn't bloomed, and she was thinking it was past the time where they should. Or maybe she was also saying that there weren't even that many buds. So and then eventually they did bloom. But I think that my experience with mine was, yes, that it didn't. I didn't get quite as many flowers as I would think that I probably should. And indeed, maybe they were a little bit late.
Yeah, mine were really odd this year, too, with my peonies, because my early season ones bloomed late. Right along with the mid-season ones. So it was very odd. And normally would never have bloomed at the same time. We always would have had early ones first and then the mid-season ones, of course, later on. And they bloomed pretty much just at the right time, around May-ish. But even those were a little bit late. So it's been kind of an odd thing. So I guess that's the bottom line. Is it, you know, depending on what the weather is, we're going to see some differences. That's why it's probably very difficult for people to have lilac festivals or rose festivals, because how do you figure when they're going to bloom?
All right, let's go to line number two in Urbana. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
Good morning.
This is a lawn. We have a creeping along the grass, little leaves weed.
So probably creeping Charlie, maybe, or ground
That's
ivy?
That's right.
Right.
It would also help us if you would turn your radio down. Sounds like we're getting a little feedback there from your radio.
So Creeping Charlie.
Yeah, it's probably Creeping Charlie. It's often listed as ground ivy. If you ever look actually herbicide labels, they usually call it ground ivy. So sometimes it's a little bit confusing. And you're rejoicing in it, or are you trying to get rid of it, I assume?
I want to get rid of it.
Yeah, Creeping Charlie is really a tough one. It is a perennial. It comes back every year, the same plants, but they also produce lots and lots of seeds from the flowers. So you'll notice that. Few different ways. Is there any good grass in there at all?
Oh, yes.
So there's good grass in among it. So you could use some of the broadleaf herbicides, the ones that we would typically use for dandelions and some of those types of weeds as well. But probably timing on those is a little... It's really with a lot of our pesticides and mainly with herbicides, too, is that when we get really high temperatures, the herbicides don't work very well because the plants kind of shut down. So when we can start getting temperatures above 85 degrees... Your herbicides are not going to work as well, so it's not really the time necessarily to be doing it now. I'd wait till things cool off a little bit, so certainly below 85 degrees. But read and follow all the label directions. It'll tell you how to use it. And the one thing I've noticed with Creeping Charlie or ground ivy is that generally when the label says you can reapply it, you should reapply it. And so most of the labels will say something along the lines of reapplication is possible within 6 weeks or so, after 6 weeks. But it'll tell you when you can reapply it. The thing I've noticed with green ground ivy, it seems like, you know, the first application kind of cuts it down a little bit, but it doesn't completely get rid of it. The second application does much better as far as getting rid of it.
Thank you.
Uh-huh.
All right,
good luck.
Thank you. And we'll go again to Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
I had two questions about hydrangeas. When I moved into my current house, someone had planted a hydrangea bush on the south side, so... I know that's the wrong location, so should I just wait till it stops flowering and then move it to the north side of the house, or just what should I do?
Yeah, I think probably what I would do is probably at least wait until September or so as far as moving it. It's a tough time to be moving plants, especially hydrangeas, which take a lot of water. But you're absolutely right. South side is not really the place where... Now, is this a pink or blue one or white one?
It's a white one. And when I first moved here, I got a lot of nice, big, puffy, you know, flowers.
Uh-huh.
I noticed this year it's very leggy. The blooms are very small. But I just know hydrangeas don't do well on the south side, and that side of the house gets very, very hot.
Yeah. They really like, especially late afternoon shade.
Yeah.
So if there's a place where you can put them where they get that, you know, some shade in the afternoon, that's really wonderful. So I think I would wait. I'd certainly wait probably to September. You're probably going to have to, you know, right now we don't have to worry quite so much because we're getting some rain, but certainly, you know, try to give it some extra water. It's going to be the big thing to make sure that it's doing well for you. And you may want to think about, I'm not sure which one, probably if you have a white one, it probably blooms on new wood, and you actually can prune those back.
Okay.
So those would be ones that you could prune after they flower.
Okay. The other question I had is I have a blue hydrangea that I bought at a local garden shop, and I planted it on the east side of the house, and I get nice big green leaves, and I haven't had a bloom in about 2 years. So,
yeah.
Do they bloom later than the white ones?
Do you know what kind it is or what the name on it was? Or?
No, I got it at one of the local garden shops. Mm-hmm. I don't even remember now which one.
Mm-hmm. Now, last year, I will tell you, for a lot of those, like in the summer, and some of those are supposed to bloom on new wood and old wood both, they did not do very well last year. I talked to a lot of people. Mine didn't bloom. A lot of people said they're... So last year was not a good test. So I'm not sure when you planted these.
Yeah.
Did you plant them last year? Or?
No, I think this is the third year they've been in the ground. The first year I planted them, it had blooms on it from the flower shop.
Right.
And they did okay. The next year I think I got one flower and I tended it and it was a nice big blue flower. But last year I didn't have any flowers and I looked at it recently and there aren't even any buds on it.
Yeah. So last year was kind of a wash because we had that really, really cold spell in April and it really hit a lot of things and a lot of those did not do well. The other thing with these guys is if it is one of those endless summer ones, they bloom on old wood and new wood both.
Uh-huh.
Now, the trouble is some of the blue pink hydrangeas only bloom on old wood. Wood from the year before. So if it gets cut off, pruned, if it gets winter killed, any of those things happen, then you don't have any old wood, you don't have any flowers. That can be the issue. But that's why people, when they buy hydrangeas, especially the pink blue ones, really do a little homework, find out which one it is. Does it bloom on old wood or new wood? I would really recommend the ones that bloom on old and new wood. That's why you're pretty well guaranteed you're always going to get some flowers.
Okay. So when the leaves drop this year, just don't prune it at all?
Correct. On the pink and blue ones, the best time to actually prune those is right after they flower.
Okay.
And then they have time to put on some new wood, then that will be old wood next year, and then hopefully you'll get flowers then.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, good luck.
Very good. Our guest this morning in this part of Focus 580, Sandeep Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. And once a month on a Tuesday she's here, we talk about lawn and garden care. And your questions are welcome. 333-9455. That's the number for Champaign-Urbana. Toll free, 800-222-9455. Next, we'll talk with someone in Vermilion County, Line 4. Hello.
Good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had two questions, but your hydrangea discussion makes me ask a third. I got a new little potted blue hydrangea last year, planted on the north side of the house. So it gets shade part of the day from a wing of the house.
Mm-hmm.
And it's bloomed, a nice big pink bloom. I've been putting coffee grounds on it all winter.
Mm-hmm.
Is it going to stay pink? And does that mean I have to get a stronger alkaline to make it blue next year?
Yeah, actually with hydrangeas, to make them blue, they're blue and blue or pink, depending on now. They'll naturally be pink around here because of the pH of our soils. In order for them to go blue, they have to have an acidic soil, much more acidic than what we have here. So we're not going alkaline. We're going the other direction. We're making them more acidic like we think of with azaleas and rhododendrons. They also need aluminum, believe it or not, in the soil in order to turn them blue. And so generally, we're always going to be looking at aluminum sulfate to get them into that blue color because it provides aluminum and it also acidifies the soil.
Would you just sprinkle it on as though you're peppering it like a...
At this point, that's the best thing you can do. Ideally, before they're planted, that's really the time to actually mix it within the soil, the aluminum sulfate. So ideally, as you're planting them, and if it just seems like it's just not working to sprinkling on the soil, you may find you really want to go ahead and maybe lift it and then amend the soil with aluminum sulfate and maybe even some sulfur to help acidify that soil. And then you'll probably have much better success. And then periodically, you might use the aluminum sulfate to keep it acidic. So it's just hard once you get them planted.
Okay. My other questions. Do you deadhead Asiatic lilies? Do you break them off? I had a burgundy one that's just finished blooming.
Yes, I would. Because there's no, you know, we don't really want the seeds, and so there's no reason for the plant to go ahead and produce seeds and use that energy. So, yes, I definitely would just pop the buds off.
Okay, and my dill now is making big fronds and getting ready to go to seed.
Mm-hmm.
When you go to the farmer's market, they have these nice little bunches of light, you know, little tender dill. Is it too late to do anything to these plants to get them to last longer?
It's too late to do anything to those plants because once they seed, they pretty much do their thing. But what you can do to have a regular supply, and more likely what the farmers market folks are doing, is you have to actually seed them periodically. So every couple of weeks, you put out another bunch of seeds. And so you're always getting these new, fresh ones coming up.
Okay.
And so it's really just a matter of, you know, planting the seed over several weeks.
So if I let these go to seed, then I'll get some more.
Yep, sure. Because then they'll just reseed, it'll pop down, and then they'll come back up again. So sure, that's how you, yeah.
All right, thank you.
Mm-hmm.
All right, thanks for the call. So on the...
sounds like first
the,
word.
The plant...
hydrangeas?
I'm on the hydrangeas. I'm sorry, I just lost my mind for a moment there. Will they... can you use on them, or would you recommend the kind of fertilizers that are formulated for the acid-loving plants?
You absolutely. I mean, they need an acidic soil in order to turn blue, which is what everybody likes. And aluminum becomes more available when the soil is acidic. So there's probably enough, you know, once you acidify the soil, there's probably enough aluminum then available to the plant to turn them blue. It's probably not going to be that competitive deep blue that people seem to really like. Mm-hmm. So probably it's going to take aluminum sulfate. But they should certainly be blue-ish if you're even just using the fertilizer that you would use for azaleas and rhododendrons.
Yeah, okay.
Because you're going the right direction.
All right.
And I should say, and if I could just put something,
yes.
And I should say, only use aluminum sulfate on hydrangeas. Don't use it on anything else. Don't use it on blueberries. Don't use it on rhododendrons and azaleas, because there is a point where aluminum becomes toxic to plants, and blueberries and some of those will show aluminum toxicity. So aluminum sulfate only for hydrangeas.
Okay. Yeah, I think on a past show we made that point because somehow people had gotten the idea that that's for those kinds of plants, that's a good thing.
And
it's not a good thing.
They're not interchangeable. You can certainly use acid plants, you know, acid fertilizers on hydrangeas, but don't go the other direction. Don't use aluminum sulfate on other acid-loving plants.
Okay. Next up is someone in Brazil, Indiana, line number one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I really love gardening, and I am fortunate I have a lot of time in the summer to do gardening. We had flooding at our house. That was early June. The house inside was okay, but we had flooding throughout the whole yard. I mean, it was really pretty bad, and we're fortunate our house didn't get damaged. But I lost some plants, including, I'm not sure this one is going to die, but I'm wondering what I can do with it. I have a Korean spice viburnum.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful plant. It smells great.
Right, oh yeah.
And what has happened with this is it wasn't totally flooded for the, we had about a week where our yard was pretty much submerged in water. Mm. And this was very, very wet, but it wasn't submerged in water. But the leaves are crinkly. The stems are soft. Some of the herbaceous plants that I have, that the same thing kind of happened. I've cut them back, like an Asclepias tuberosa. I cut that back and a few others. I think they're going to be okay. But I'm just wondering with this particular shrub.
Does it still have some green leaves on it, but it just showed some dieback?
Absolutely no.
There's no green leaves at all?
No. Mm. Leaves are crunchy. And I'm just wondering if I should prune the leaves off. You know, it doesn't look great, but, you know, that's okay. I'll do whatever I need to do to save the plant.
Yeah, the one thing certainly we've noticed with plants, it's just like with heat. You know, some plants will tolerate that wet soils and others won't. And unfortunately, viburnums are in that group where they really don't like really wet soils for long periods of time. So it just happens to be one of those as super plant, as you know. I think what I would do is just do a little bit of investigation on it, and maybe just take your thumbnail and sort of scratch a few of the stems to see if they're still green under there.
Yeah, they're still green. I've done that already.
Okay, so you've done that. So I think at this point, I'd probably cut off anything that's obviously dead.
Okay.
I mean, if it's obviously dead, go ahead and cut it off. And you might be surprised on, you know, how much. If it's still got some green, it's got every capability to go ahead and relief. The only problem is, and usually what we see with these kind of cases where things get flooded is, you know, you get, the problem is the roots die. You know, they're not getting enough oxygen. Yeah. The roots die. And then when you have root die back, then you get some root rot injury problems as well. Some fungus come in. But then the problem is they have such a reduced root system that when it does finally dry out and it gets hot, then they really suffer again just because of drought stress. So I guess my point is that I'd really watch this. If things really do dry out, we go several weeks, no rain, really hot, I'd really watch that one and really try to give it some supplemental watering.
Yeah, and it's in a good spot. It's on the north side of a carport, so it's protected. It's not, you know, baking in the sun.
Yeah,
the south side of the house that is baking in the sun, and it looks great. That was not affected by the flood.
My theory, as long as there's green, there's hope.
Okay. Yeah.
So as long as there's some green there.
Hoping. And I just want to make one comment. You know, gardening is such a wonderful thing to do. It beautifies our world. It really helps the insects and the birds. Two things. Native plants are wonderful. Indiana is really hot in the summer. And we've had a lot of moisture, but native plants do great. I want to encourage people to plant more native plants. And the other thing is, if you're using lots of herbicides and pesticides in your yard, you are killing things. So there are things that you can do to avoid using poisons in your yard. And that's what I wanted to say. And thank you very much. I love your program.
All right. Sure. Well, thank you. Anything else you want to mention?
Well, I think with, you know, people have to make choices when it comes to herbicides and pesticides and all those kinds of things. People make choices. And what I hope we do, U of I Extension, and to pass on, if someone is going to be using an herbicide, how, what can we recommend that is least toxic and to do it at the correct time so you're not just putting it out there for no reason. So I think to use it intelligently, mm-hmm. I think, helps. But I think any time we can reduce them or not use them at all or do other things or not worry about Creeping Charlie and just figure it's green. Hey, it's green. And it grows where the grass doesn't grow. That's where I always figure you get this nice ground cover and the grass isn't growing there anyway. So, you know, I think it – so we all have to kind of think or rethink, you know, how we use pesticides and stuff.
Yeah.
And plus native plants are – they're just beautiful plants. It's just unfortunately for a long time they were kind of sidestepped because they were, you know, native. But
yeah.
Now I think people will get more and more interested.
Well, and I think that what Carl says is perfectly true. You know, you want something that's going to have grown up growing in the conditions that you've
right.
got. And if you have periods in the summer when it's really hot and it's really dry, it helps to have plants that can tolerate that and that it
right.
that it doesn't bother them.
Right, so, right. And really these plants have evolved for those time periods where it was particularly wet, especially in spring and fall, and then gets these hot, dry periods. And so they put down lots and lots and lots of roots. Now that's how they tolerate it for a lot of the prairie plants.
All right. Well, let's go back here and we'll talk with some more folks. Next caller is in Arcola, line 2. Hello.
Good morning.
Yes.
I have a river birch tree that was damaged in the storms of last month that I want to replace this fall. So I have two questions. How close can I plant a tree to the stump of the tree that was damaged?
Mm-hmm.
And what trees do you recommend that I consider?
Okay. As far as how close, it really just depends on, you know, just physically being able to plant it. You know, if it's a tree that had died because of disease, I'd be much more concerned about how close you might put another tree for fear that there might be something there that might actually transfer to the other plant. But since we know that's not the issue with this one, then I'd really think, you know, just physically, how close can you get it? You know, just by being able to dig a hole the size of the roots of the other tree. So that's really kind of up to you and how you want to do that. As far as what kinds of tree? Are you looking for a shade tree or a small tree? Or
I'm looking for a shade tree.
A shade tree? You know, actually one of the trees that when it's young, it's talking about native, but when it's young, it's so gangly. It looks like a gangly teenager, but Kentucky coffee trees, I don't know if you know those at all. Super tree. They're native. Super trees don't seem to have a whole lot of insect and disease problems, but they have very thick branches when they're young, and so they just look like this gangly, you know, teenager. So they're not very pretty at first, but then they have this beautiful bark as they grow. And as I said, they're native, so they do very well around here. There are male and females, so you may want to look for a male. The females actually have big pods on them. And depending on where you have it, you may not want to deal with the big pods, but it's really a pretty tree, so that might be really a good choice for you. If you don't mind acorns, certainly lots of the oak trees, and oak trees have kind of gotten a bad rap in that they grow really slow, but they really don't. There's a few of them, maybe whites and burrs, that grow fairly slow, but a lot of the other ones actually grow fairly quickly, or certainly medium size when it comes to growing. So certainly the oak trees, I think, would be ones I would look at, too. Those are ones that kind of come off the top of my head. Where are there other ones that you're thinking about, or...?
No, actually, I was thinking about oaks and maples. And what was the name of the first tree, the Kentucky
coffee tree. And the story is that evidently the settlers used to use the beans for a coffee substitute. I wouldn't try it at home, but they're really gorgeous trees. If you ever get a chance to find one, look for one. As they age, they're just magnificent, and I don't think there's too many trees that will do it. Certainly oak trees. I think the big thing with the oak trees is just look at the size of the acorn, and there are certainly some of them that have a smaller acorn that people don't mind quite as much as they might on some of the ones like bur oaks that tend to have really big acorns. So that would be one thing. I'd probably stay away from pin oaks. They don't seem to do terribly well around here because our soils just aren't quite acidic enough. That'd probably be the one I would probably stay away from.
Okay. Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you for the call. We are at our midpoint here. Our guest is Sandy Mason. She's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here. We talk about lawn and garden care. And if you have plant questions, you give us a call, 333-9455, toll free, 800-222-9455. And up next, we have someone in Urbana, line number one. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
I had a question about wisteria, which is about 10 to 15 years old and it's never bloomed, and I'm wondering why that's the case. It's on the northwest corner of the house, kind of shaded.
Well, you know, earlier I said if as long as it's green, there's hope. I would probably change that comment a little bit. With wisterias, I've decided that some of them are just never going to bloom. I had one myself that was over 10 years old, easily over 10 years old, and I did everything to it. I did everything that everybody tells you to do, prune it back really hard, root prune it, everything. I tried talking bad to it. I mean, everything. I tried everything that I could think of, and the silly thing still didn't bloom. So I just decided I was just going to replace it. So there's certainly lots of things that you can do. As I said, pruning it really hard is one of the recommendations, root pruning it. We actually just take a spade and you sort of root prune it. And basically you're trying to stress the thing. But I think some of them are just precocious and they're just not going to bloom. After that many years, we know that they often take, you know, up to 7 years or so. But after 7 years, you got to be seeing something. There are some new varieties now. Actually, I got one called Amethyst Falls. And it was blooming in the pot when I bought it. So I figured that's a good sign. So you may want to think, if you're truly wanting some wisteria blooms, I would really think about some of these other ones and just find one that's just blooming in the pot.
Okay. Could you give me that name of that variety again?
I have a hard time saying amethyst. Amethyst Falls.
Amethyst?
Amethyst. How do you say it? Isn't that a stone? Amethyst.
Yes, it is a stone. A semi-precious gemstone.
Yeah. Can you say it?
So
you
amethyst.
Say it. Amethyst.
Okay, I got you.
You know what I mean. Yeah. Don't make me spell it either, because I can't spell it.
Well, that I couldn't do that. I couldn't spell it for you. I could say it. I can't spell
it. Anyway, so I would look, and there's another one that kind of escapes me right now, but they're actually sort of breeding them with some native ones. They're sort of interbreeding them, some of the Chinese with some of the native ones, and the native one seems to be much better at blooming, but they didn't have the huge flowers. So I think we're seeing some hybrids that are coming out that are much better and more likely to bloom for you.
Thanks very much.
Good luck.
Thank you. Okay. Next up, Tara Haute on line number four. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
Good morning. Hi. I first wanted to just tell you that I absolutely love your show.
Thank you.
We moved into our home about 5 years ago, and we had some beautiful, really established hot pink peonies.
Mm-hmm.
And last year, we had a fence put in May. And I moved them. I transplanted them, and I went online, and they talked about splitting the roots and that kind of thing. And I did all of that and moved them to a sunnier location, but pretty much, you know, same soil conditions and everything. And this year, I did not get one bloom on them. The mm-hmm. greens came up, and they're very pretty, but no flowers at all. So I'm wondering what I need to do.
Yeah, I guess right. I think a couple things, because I don't know if they mentioned when you replant them, the big thing with peonies is they have when you dig them up, and I don't know if you noticed, hopefully you noticed that they have these kind of butt, they call them eyes, but they look like little pink noses.
Yes. Yep.
Okay. So those are going to be the stems for the next year. So you really have to pay attention to how deep you plant those, and they shouldn't be planted any more than 2 inches.
Right, and I did that.
Okay, so you got that. Because if they're planted deeper than that, you get foliage, and it takes them forever to flower at that point. So, okay, so you took care of that. The other thing is sometimes if there's less than 3 eyes per division, sometimes it takes them a year or two to finally recoup enough that they'll go ahead and flower, which is what I wonder about on yours.
Okay.
I don't know how much you divided them, but...
I divided 3 plants into 5 plants.
Okay, so probably didn't divide them that much.
Six, yeah.
Yeah, so as long as you didn't plant them too deep and you're getting good foliage on them, I just have a feeling it's just taking them a while. And sometimes we'll see that with perennials. It just takes them a while to sort of recoup and, you know, get enough energy supplied that they can go ahead and flower well for you. So it sounds like you put them in the right spot, you planted them right. So I think they probably just need some time.
They're my absolute favorite flowers, and I, like, plan my vacations around when they bloom.
Oh, wow. So how disheartening that they didn't flower
for
you.
Actually, I take that back. I got one bloom, and my 3-year-old snapped it off before it blew.
How sad.
I will look forward to. Is there any sort of special fertilizer or anything that I should Miracle-Grow or anything like that that I should put on them?
You can certainly use a fertilizer on them. I'd probably use something like a 5-10-10 or something like that. A little higher in phosphorus and potassium. And so you certainly could do that. But most of the time, they don't really need a whole lot of anything beyond that. And it wasn't the buds formed but then didn't open. You just didn't even get any buds to form.
Exactly.
Okay. Because they do get a few diseases where the buds just turn brown and they stay there, and which is another issue altogether.
Well, that's worse, yeah.
Yeah, that's it. So I have a feeling they're just needing a little time to recover.
Very good.
Good
Thank
luck.
You so much.
Sure.
All right. Thanks for the call. We'll keep going here. And the next person is in Normal, line number 2. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
My problem is that I have 2 Turkish trazel nut trees in my backyard, which I planted about 15 years ago. They're fairly large. They got defoliated by Japanese beetles.
I knew you were going to say that.
Last year. And this year, several of the branches have died, and those branches that haven't died seem to have a little bit of foliage way out at the end.
Mm-hmm.
Should I give up and have a tree surgeon cut it down?
Yeah. The one thing, Japanese beetles, which you found out, love hazelnut. I mean, they think these are the best thing ever. They do like that, but usually the plant will recover from that. But the thing I have noticed is those guys do seem to get some diseases. They actually will get some canker diseases, and I don't know if you've noticed any kind of like brown sunken areas or anything on the stems themselves. Like if you'd follow that stem where you say there's only just foliage on the end, follow that back to the main trunk and see if there's kind of this dark brown kind of sunken area. And because they do seem to get a few diseases.
Haven't noticed any of that.
Yeah.
But.
So that might be one of the things going on, or just would some, they actually, you know, branch out fairly well after you prune them. So they will take a fairly good pruning. I don't know if that just would help them to even look better if you did some pruning on them.
Yeah, hard to tell. I mean, right now they're, maybe 30 feet tall.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah.
And the leaves are way out at the end of the branch.
Yeah. I guess my point is that from what I've noticed, that those guys do not tend to be long-lived plants. So 15 years is probably getting toward that end.
And you don't usually grow them around here.
No, they just, you know, they're beautiful and people enjoy them. It's just, they seem to have their issues for one reason or another, that they just don't hang around for long periods of time. It's hard to find an old one.
Yeah.
So,
okay. Well, maybe time for the tree surgeon.
Yeah, you may want to do that. If you want to find out further, you could say, you know, take a picture or send a sample to the to the U of I plant clinic, or take it to your local extension office and, you know, see if you can figure out more with them. But that'd be about the only other thing I could suggest.
All right.
Good luck.
Good luck.
Thank you.
Just on the Japanese beetles, I think the sort of the standard advice is that most plants will survive whatever damage there is. And if you have one of those particular kinds of plants that they really, really like, and you're concerned about the damage, you can spray. You can use an insecticide. Mm-hmm. But is it actually too late to do that? If shouldn't you have started that actually before they show up?
Yeah, the one thing, some of the pesticides that we use, the insecticides that we use, are actually systemic, that you actually, you know, put in a watering can. You know, if you mix it water, put it in a watering can, and then put it in the soil. Uh-huh. It's really too late for that kind of an application, because that's really something that should be done March, April, really early in the season, so the plant can take it up and then, you know, really help to protect it in that way. So at this point, it's kind of late on, would be late on those things. You could do a, you know, contact type spray, where you could just go ahead and spray them, you know, along those lines as you see the beetles. But, you know, the other thing, you know, early in the morning, you can do your routine, you know, where you go out with a soapy water, bucket mm-hmm. of soapy water, because mm-hmm. they do fall, you know, as soon as you touch them, they'll fall right into the water. And if you don't have too many, and usually what we found is they always pick on the same plants. You know, every year you'll have this indicator plant. They'll show up there first. It'll be a rose generally, or maybe some smartweed or something in that kind of that category, or lindens. Those are the ones that they pick on first. And if you can take care of those first guys, they really have found that you have fewer later on. So it's like those first guys are sort of the, you know, scouts telling everybody where to go. So if you can get rid of the scouts, then you have fewer later.
Yeah.
So really concentrate on those first guys, trying to control them, however method you want to, and then hopefully you have later. But as I said, usually you know, by the time we get it well into August, these guys are gone. Usually the roses recover and you'll get flowers again, you get leaves again. So a lot of things will recover after them. They just don't look too good in the process.
Yeah,
so.
I think getting in there early is really important. One of the things that Phil Nixon has always talked about when he's here is that you have to understand that Japanese beetles, they like to feed where beetles have fed before. So as you say, that first kind of damage, the first time you see them, if you can get on it right away, then that will somehow make that plant less appealing for when the numbers start to grow.
Because they're flying in from other areas. And if they don't get those signals to fly into that particular plant or that particular area, then it helps. But we recommend that you don't use the beetle traps. I mean, those really have been found to actually attract
more
than
they catch.
Yeah. So, you know, the joke is you put them in your neighbor's yard. But
all right. Next up is Champagne, line one. Hello.
Hi. Mm-hmm. I have a new pergola on a deck, and I'm considering growing something at the top of the pergola. And I'm wondering what you would recommend. I don't want something that's going to be real messy because it would be dropping onto the deck. And I don't want something that's going to attract too many bees and bugs.
Okay. And how long or how tall does it need to get, or how long does it need to get? I mean, do you want it really long or?
You mean long in terms
as
of?
As in going, does it need to go, you know, 10 feet over this pergola or up and over? And I'm not explaining myself very well here.
Yeah, so you're actually asking about the top dimension.
Well, how much length the vine needs to get. I guess what I'm saying is, things like clematis actually, or clematis are actually very good in that a lot of the things that you mentioned, I think they would fit that category. The problem is on some of those, they don't get terribly long. You know, they might get 12, 15 feet, but they don't get much longer than that. It's not like wisteria that's going to take over the whole thing. So that's what I was asking.
Probably 12 by 12 or 13 by 13, probably 12 by 12.
So I think probably, and there's a ton of different clematis varieties or clematis varieties that actually do very well.
Okay.
And I think that, and the nice thing is, you know, you can get some of them that are much more vigorous. Some of the smaller flowered ones, like the Sweet Autumn, I think a lot of people know that one, has a little bitty white flower, very fragrant, late season. I'm not sure about the bee issue. I don't remember seeing a whole lot of bees on those, but that would be one you might want to do a little bit of checking on, if you're concerned about bee issues. So that might be one you might think of, but it tends to get much longer and bigger and pretty vigorous kind of thing, but very pretty and fragrant, which might be nice underneath a pergola.
And what was the variety of that?
It's called Sweet Autumn.
Okay.
And I should say, as far as the bee issues, unless you have somebody that's allergic, most of the time the bees just go on their merry way, and even if they happen to be around, they generally aren't going to bother people that are on the deck for any period of time.
Yeah, I'm just thinking about kids because kids get pretty upset when they see bees.
Well, they need to relax a little bit.
Right.
Bees need all the help they can get right now, believe me.
Right, that's true.
So
that's
you might think about those. There's another one called Yellow Angel, or has angel in the name, that tends to be a yellow flower, and it's also very vigorous.
Okay.
And it's another clematis variety. Or you can certainly get the bigger flowered ones. Actually, if you go to the Chicago Botanic Garden website, they actually did a really nice study and evaluation on different clematis varieties.
Okay.
And check under their plant, I think it's under plant research, and look at some of the varieties. Because it lists, you know, what the color is, the disease resistance, all that kind of good stuff. And you may find that one you really like.
Okay. Do you have time for a question about tomatoes?
Sure.
Okay. I planted my tomatoes late because I was gone in May, so they didn't get planted until late May. And I'm wondering, should I put some fertilizer on them? Is there anything I can do to speed up the process of them, you know, flowering more and creating more tomatoes?
Yeah, the one thing with fertilizing with those guys, if you fertilize too much, you get less and less leaf growth and not a whole lot of flowers, which is not the direction you want to go. So if you do want to fertilize, I definitely use something that's really low in nitrogen.
Such as?
Like a 5-10-10, or even just to use some compost. you know, something okay. that's, you know, decomposed, something that's well decomposed, you know, compost, something along those lines. It's going to add some nutrients to it. It's also going to help hold in the moisture, because that's the other thing that you can do, you know, depending on what kind of rain situations, is that to give them water on a regular basis. They like mm-hmm. a consistent watering. So mm-hmm. don't let them go really dry. And I think just doing those are some of the things you can do to really help speed them up. It is truly one of those things where I think a lot of the tomatoes were kind of slow this year. It was a little cooler earlier, mm-hmm. So it's taking them some time. And a lot of it's going to depend on what varieties you have. If you have some of the really big beefsteak ones, you're going to find that those aren't going to flower and produce till later. If you have some of the smaller ones, you know, the mm-hmm. the cherries.
Actually, yeah,
and some
my
of those.
Cherry tomatoes are doing the best.
Yeah, because those guys, you know, they flower quickly and they do their thing, and you can't hardly beat them. So you may just have to find. So watering is probably going to be your best bet.
Thank you very much. Mm-hmm.
Okay, thank you. And to Urbana, line number 3 for another call. Hello.
Hi.
Mm-hmm.
Are you aware of any kind of a maple tree blight or issue that might be going on this summer?
Well, maples have their issues. you're noticing certain trees dying?
This is a mature tree, I don't know, maybe 50 or years older, and it had been fine for a long time. And this year, as I look out, I'm in my second story window, I see that there are maybe 7 or 8 branches all dispersed all around the tree that are completely dead. The mm-hmm. leaves have just gone brown. Mm-hmm. There are plenty of green leaves, and then I looked around the neighborhood and I seem to see a couple like that, maybe not so many as on this tree.
Mm-hmm. Well, maples do get some disease issues. And probably verticillium wilt, which is a fungal disease, is probably the one that we probably would see the most often. And you will often see where it seems like that everything's going along fine, and then you get this dead branch where it just either leafs out early in the spring and then the leaves die, or, you know, something along those lines. So I have a feeling that might be what's going on. The problem is the verticillium, it's a soil-borne fungus. There really isn't anything you can do about it. We try to keep trees as healthy as we possibly can, those kind of things. But, you know, if that's an issue, there isn't a whole lot you can do. What you might want to do is get a certified arborist out there and take a look at it, see if there's something else going on. Because it could be other things that, you know, you get girdling roots. I don't know if you've had any construction or anything around the trees that might have damaged roots. So there's other things that could certainly go on that would cause some dieback. But to answer your question, is there some new disease or something like that? I'm not aware of.
Okay, so it's on the parkway, and it's the city's tree anyway. So.
Well, then I would call the city arborist and have him take a look at it.
Yeah, I would just really be so devastated if this tree had to be cut down.
Isn't it? Yeah. You know, a lot of times, even if it is verticillium or even some, you know, old trees, you know, they lose a branch or two, and they can still hang on for a long time and still be fairly sound trees, even though they lose a branch or two. Uh-huh. So it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to die tomorrow or anything.
Okay, thank you.
Right. Good luck. It's
tough. We have about 10 minutes left in this Barn of Focus 580 with Sandeep Mason. She is a horticulture educator with U of I Extension in Champaign County. Once a month on a Tuesday, she's here, and we talk about lawn and garden care. And if you have a question, give us a call. 333-9455, toll free 800-222-9455. Is there something in particular you'd like to talk about?
Well, and actually it might be something that Phil Nixon might talk about somewhere along the line too, is we have a brand new Home Yard and Garden Pest Guide. This is a 2008 edition. Mm-hmm. And it's really, Phil Nixon has the entomologist, U of I entomologist that's on the show from time to time. It had a lot to do with getting this out. But I think it's a wonderful source of information, as in, you know, it talks about different types of, you know, if you're looking for vegetables that are aren't susceptible to certain diseases or resistant to certain diseases. If you're trying to figure out when do I actually apply an herbicide for Creeping Charlie or whatever, and then what do I apply, it's really a great source of information. And I'm really excited about it in that they've done a lot of things. They have an index in it now. They've done a lot of things to update this 2008 edition. And it just really is one of those things that I think people would find very helpful. And certainly if you work in this business, I think everybody should have one of these. They do run, I think they're $25. You can get it through U of I College of Aces publications. You can certainly get them through that. And we actually sell them in our office, and probably most of the extension offices probably sell them as well. So it's just a good resource, and I just want to let people know there is a brand new one.
Okay, that's great. Well, and, you know, when you've been here on the program and Phil's been here occasionally, we do have problems, have questions about insect pest problems. And sometimes it's difficult to answer that question because we're not sure, based on the information mm-hmm. that we're getting from the caller, what the insect is that we're mm-hmm. dealing with. And so one thing that I suppose it's always true, whether you're talking about a disease issue or you're dealing with an insect issue, before you know what to do about it, you got to know what it is.
Right.
And I wonder if something like this could actually really help people at least initially try to do some diagnosis so that they can get a better idea of what it is they're dealing with, and then also maybe it would answer some questions about what sort of steps do you want to take if you're going to try to control that.
Yeah, because it really is not just, you know, pesticide listings in here. It truly is, you know, how can I manage this problem? And also what you said, because sometimes I've looked in this here too, let's see if that plant really gets, you know, elm leaf beetle or whatever it might be, and really see if it gets it, if that's an issue. Because these are going to be common, what's going to be in this book is going to be common stuff. What do people usually see? What pests do they usually see? So it is a good way you can sort of, you know, go the opposite direction, trying to figure out what the diagnosis is on a certain thing. But it just really is a wealth of information. So hopefully people get a chance to take a look at it.
Okay. It's the Home
Yard
and
Garden
Pest
Guide. Quick and easy reference. And it's insects, weeds, and diseases.
Oh, okay. So
it's insects, weeds, diseases, and it's on lawns, vegetables, fruits, you name it.
Great. So. All right. And it's the kind of thing you can get through your extension.
Yeah, check with your local extension office. We do have I have a toll-free number. People want more information. It's 1-800-345-6087. And say they can call that, or they can just go to the U of I Extension website, look up under publications, and then you can find it under there as well.
Okay, great. Well, let's talk with some other folks here. And next we'll have someone in Savoy. Line one, hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Last year I got a deck and put a pergola over the top of it. And so I wanted to grow some sort of flower up it. And I looked for clematis, but couldn't find any, and I saw these mandevilles.
Mm-hmm.
And I have three mandevilles, and they're starting to inch their way up. Are those winter hardy here?
No, unfortunately.
Okay. I didn't think so.
Yeah, they're really pretty.
The one I really saw them, I saw them in Florida.
Yeah, they're very pretty and have gorgeous flowers and stuff. You can bring them in. I actually have dug them up and brought them in. So you certainly could have winter over them. They don't look all that great through the winter time, but you can actually get them through the winter and then bring them back out again. But yeah, unfortunately, those don't live.
Could you put them in the garage for the winter?
You probably get away with that if it doesn't freeze in your garage.
Okay.
Yeah, so all you might try that.
Yeah, because I didn't take them out of the pot. I was lazy to do that. So
they're
still in the pot.
You were
added more dirt and that sort of thing. So.
You were just thinking ahead. You knew you had to take them back in.
Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you. And let's go next to Cutler, Indiana, line number four. Right here. Hello.
Yes, good morning.
Mm-hmm.
Question about my black locust trees. I've had approximately 50 of them for the last 30 years or so, and they're always the last of my variety of species to leaf out. And usually early June, they're starting to get their full foliage. But this year, I noticed it was a good 3 weeks, 3.5 weeks that they were behind schedule. I've checked other locust species in the area, and mine seem to be the only ones doing that. I know the concept of microclimates, but I don't know if it could be that specific a thing, or if you've got any ideas about why mine seem to be so slow this season.
Mm-hmm. So it was just this year you noticed that
this year they look healthy. Mm-hmm. There's doesn't seem to be any disease now that they're out. They look like they always do.
Mm-hmm. And it really was an odd year in that some things did react differently because it was cooler earlier. So it could be one of those. I'm not familiar with black locusts, whether they would be one of those that would be in. So that would be one thing. I think maybe it was just the year. And the other thing we might check on is, you know, some of the trees get some leaf disease problems early, and they try to leaf out, and they get these fungal diseases, and then the leaves drop off, or their buds drop off, and then they have to leaf again.
Mm-hmm.
Sycamores do this a lot. They get an anthracnose. And so they always look like they leaf out late, but they actually leafed out early. It's just those first leaves died. And I'm not aware of that with black locusts. But that might be another thing that's going on with them.
Okay.
But I have a feeling it was probably just the year that we had.
It was a strange spring.
Yeah. So I think they're probably just one of those heat lovers that really does much better in the heat, which wouldn't surprise me at all with black locusts.
All right. Well, thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you. Next is Champagne, line two. Hello.
Hi.
Yeah.
I want to thank Sandy for this great service.
Okay,
and I want to
you.
Ask her to talk a little bit more about the wisteria that she mentioned earlier that would just take over if it were on a pergola. Recently I heard that Amethyst Falls would be a little less aggressive and maybe would even flower a little more dependently. And I'm wondering if there is wisteria that she recommends, and if it takes maintenance, if it's possible to maintain the wisteria and keep it from being too aggressive, how do you do it?
Yeah, I think as far as the wisteria, I mean, the Amethyst Falls is one that I think has good possibilities as far as blooming regularly. I mean, mine really was literally blooming in the pot, which I thought was wonderful. Wisterias are just normally, you know, pretty aggressive vines. As far as trying to keep it back, certainly you could do some annual pruning. I would wait till after it flowers, but you could do some annual pruning. And also this whole idea of root pruning, I don't know if you're familiar with that, but it's a way, you just take a sharp spade and you actually sort of dig around it as though you're actually going to dig it up, but you don't. So you're basically just cutting the roots, and it reduces the root system, and then by reducing the root system, it actually reduces some of the growth.
So you've actually planted wisteria yourself. You don't think that it's something to be scared of?
Oh, no. But I think the one thing with wisteria is you better have a really strong pergola, arbor, whatever you have, because they'll take down a really, I mean, they're so heavy, they'll take down an inexpensive one or one that's not built well. I happen to have it on one that has these very large 4x4 posts on it. So it's a very strong arbor. So it's not a, you know, it's not going to be a problem for that one. And I wanted it to do that. I wanted it to take off. So I think it's like all the plants. You really have to think about, is this one that's going to work well for me in this particular situation? But there are some newer ones now that, as I said, they're actually crossing them with some native ones. And I can't think of the species on that particular wisteria that is native. But it'd be one of those things that it might have Missouri in the name. I just don't remember. But it's from a southern species, I think, of native wisteria. So those seem to be better at flowering. The flowers aren't as big. So might look at those.
I'm going to have to jump in here because we've come to the end of the time. My apologies. We have a couple of people we cannot take. So we'll have to leave it there.
They can always call their local extension office. Or give me a call.
Look in the book. Yeah, you can either talk to Sandy or whoever is in your area. Also, you want to tune in for the program we have called Illinois Gardener on WILL-TV Thursday night, 7 o'clock. Diane Nolan's the host. Sometimes Sandy's on that show, and a lot of other people from the U of I and from various garden centers around the area are there. And it's a live program, and it's another opportunity to call in with questions. So you can do that. And then next month, it'll already be August, and Sandy will be back, and we'll do this again.
Hard to believe, huh?
Yeah. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm,
Sandy Mason, she's a horticulture educator with U of I Extension here in Champaign County.